welcome to episode 17 of The Two Tones. Tony DeVolfo, myself, Tony Mauclair, discussing all things related to the Carlton Football Club in season 2015. How are you, Tone?
How are you, Tone? Episode 17.
Can you believe that?
The roller coaster is just careering away, isn't it?
Well, now, before going into today's podcast, we had a lovely and amiable chat with the great John Barker.
Terrific chinwag with Johnny. Pasco Vale boy, if memory serves, like a good self, is that right? Or your alter ego?
Well, yeah, like a man I know named Guido Hatzis. It's good to see the Pasco boy. Pasco Vale boy's kicking on.
Absolutely. And he's in good spirits, John, isn't he?
Well, so he should be. He's doing a great job. And the boys love him. We love him. Our ardour undiminished by the events of Friday night. We should talk about that first, I think, Tone. What were your thoughts on the Richmond game?
Yeah, cold old night at the MCG, Tony, wasn't it? And look, you know, there's been a pattern, hasn't there, in recent weeks where the boys, you know, have fought the good fight. Unfortunately, the polish isn't there. And again, you know, Friday night's game wasn't, you know, for want of chances, particularly at halftime when I think the boys rallied somewhat and I was reasonably bullish at the halftime change. But Richmond, to its credit, seemed to really shut down Carlton's running game. You know, there were many occasions, if memory serves, where we had the ball in the back half and we just seemed to be static. We couldn't get any run or couldn't find a way through the wall. So full credit to Richmond there, though the players were pretty well drilled. But it was frustrating, you know, to be in the contest for so long and not to get the chocolates. You know, it was disappointing, but coming away from the game, you felt that once again the players fought the good fight and did their best, and ultimately that's all you can ask.
Okay, we're not going to dwell on this, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. I thought the umpiring was kind of quite interventionist, if you want to put it that way. You know, obviously the cruise mark where it was a forward thrust, Carlton, that was in our inside 50. It would have been an easy set shot for somebody of Cruz's ability. An inexplicable decision, and there were many of them, and you would have noticed if you were, because I was there with a mate who's very skilled in these things. He said, watch what happens to the umpiring after three-quarter time. Carlton started getting a lot of soft frees because the free kick count at that stage was about 5-10. So I don't think the umpires were having a good night either. And that cruise thing was remarkable because it blunted a thrust.
We had momentum there. I think we were 17 points, so it might have been 23 points down at the time, and where Cruiser took that clear mark right in front of me, Tony. Right in front of me it was, and it was the worst decision I've seen undoubtedly all year, and you could probably add four or five more years to that. That really, I thought, robbed Carlton of any momentum, and it was a tragic moment for that to happen in the game. And as you said, prefacing that, the game was just over-umpired.
It really was. And sorry, Tom, but you compare it to the game the night before, the Collingwood game, where there was one free kick and a half of football, I think.
Well, that's right. And I think supporters, by and large, would prefer to see the game flow and, you know, just pay the obvious free kicks, but don't police it out of hand, because that doesn't do any favours to anyone. And you know, there's been a little bit of criticism from the football heads through the course of this week of how unfortunately the skills of the game across the board seem to be, you know, foundering somewhat. And for the first time, you know, the precision play of footballers is just a little bit skew-if. So the game can ill afford to have, you know, the men in white basically dictating terms, because I think we all want to see the game, you know, played on its merits, and players being able to attack the ball with a little bit of freedom and not being pulled up every 5 seconds for some trivial, you know, misdemeanor.
Well, exactly. So if you're paying your hard-earned to see the game, you want to see a game that's, if I can corrupt an old saying, that's umpired best when it's umpired least. Well,
absolutely.
And you just back out. You're not the stars of the show. Just let the game flow.
Couldn't have articulated better myself, Tone.
But just a side issue to that, it's not going to be the focus of the podcast, obviously, but sportsmanship. Cruz's opponent could have said to the umpire, listen, he took Mark fair and square. I think you should give him the kick. Now, we celebrate those kind of gestures of sportsmanship because they are so rare, but we just don't seem to see them very often in the modern game. I mean, there are examples of Carlton players doing it. They're far too many to enumerate, of course. But you know, what do you make of that, Tone? I mean, that kind of gesture doesn't seem to be a part of our game.
It doesn't, and I think it's a timely comment you make, Tony, particularly in the light of the first test at Cardiff, where we read this week that the Australian players didn't go back to the English dressing rooms afterwards.
Which I think is appalling.
Appalling, and it's really starting to... I think it's starting to polarise people in the sporting industry. There are those, you know, one side of it say, well, you know, this is a win at all cost game and the stakes are high. But then you've got others that are saying, well, whatever happened to sportsmanship and fair play? And surely there's a time and a place for decency, you know. And
think of Keith Miller, for God's sake.
Yeah, or Landy. You know, you think of those great acts of sportsmanship through the years. And, it's a bit sad, isn't it, that there doesn't seem to be any room for that. There was a time not long ago, you know, where players would shake hands before the game. Mm. I don't see that too often now. And also there was always an aftermatch where players, opposition teams came together with the umpires, I might add,
really?
And had a convivial ale afterwards. So it was an opportunity for players to get to know each other and perhaps appreciate their idiosyncrasies and actually form a better judgment of the character of the person they're talking with that isn't there now. So I think because there's that disconnect, that feel, you know, that sportsmanship feel has suddenly gone out the window. So it's a bit sad.
I'd love to know how the umpire that night would have felt walking in a room full of Carlton players.
Fair to say there was a lynch mob waiting. Yeah.
a couple of injuries out of the night. The Jammo incident.
Yes.
Concussion. He went down, I think it was in the first 5 to 10 minutes.
Yes.
I was kind of behind and above it, so I could see. He just went down like a sack of spuds. And Jammo is a big man.
Yes.
So that must have been a fair knock.
Well, Vickery's bigger,
yeah.
So it was a fair knock. But I was at the other end of the ground, so I was really unaware of what had happened. And my immediate thought was, oh, no, don't tell me he's broken down with the calf again, because that would have been diabolical. But to be sure, his loss cruelly impacted on our defensive structure, because what it forced John Barker to do was to actually, I think, put Tom Fields on Vickery in his first game. And that's a hell of a stretch for the young kid, you know, who had to settle the nerves, you know, game number one, and his father, Neville Fields, watching on from the stands. That was a tall order for him. So there's no doubt that early loss of Jamison really impacted on the structure of the team as a whole, and we were really under duress for a long part of the game, which
didn't help. And
didn't help
the grand scheme of things. Didn't see any of those big 80-meter clearing kicks from. Has he got a nickname yet? It's got to be Strawberries, surely.
Barrel, yeah. Because he can get onto the barrel when he kicks there from fullback. But I don't think he took a kickoff from memory. If memory serves, it was either Simo or Zach Tui. And I don't recall Tom Fields taking the kickoff. I may be wrong there, but...
So he only does them from the kickoff, does he?
No, well, at reserve grade level, we've seen him execute those...
Oh, okay, right.
Those kicks from the square.
Yep.
It would have been great, wouldn't it, to have seen him launch.
We needed them, to be honest.
Very true. But I don't know whether I'm jumping the gun here, but... Tone, but one item for discussion later on, it's perhaps a bit more pertinent now, was the form of Matthew Cruiser.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment in the game, and I think it was the second quarter, where Mark Murphy was absolutely assaulted by a wall of Richmond players at the centre bounce.
Yeah.
And Matt Cruiser went straight for that Richmond pack and to basically respond in the most aggressive manner.
Yeah.
And I think what I've loved about Cruz's comeback has been the way that he is really attacking the contest.
Mm.
And he's playing with an aggression that I don't think was I've really seen at this level for the greater part of his career. And it must be in part built on the confidence that he has in his own body that, you know, what is it, four games now back, I think, after the foot injury, might be five. And he seems to be moving so very, very freely, you know, and seeing him going about his business the way he is, it just makes you realise even more how much we actually missed Matthew Cruiser. And I think when we look back on 2015, one of the little, you know, rays of light will be in the form of Carlton's number eight, who has managed, you know, after the horrific stretch of outs, has managed in the best possible way to come back and really assert himself as a preeminent Carlton footballer.
Well, just as a linchpin of the list of the team and God, what a favourite of fans.
Absolutely. And Dennis Armfield, you know, we talk about injuries, broken arm. And again, you miss these little nuances in the game. That's a bad injury, you know, and I mean, it's at this time of year we need them all up and about, don't we?
Yeah, but, and then you've got the torn pec of Bryce Gibbs.
Yes.
I mean, that's, you know, God, we're talking bad to worse here. Now, you know, and you can speculate again if I put on my aggrieved supporter's hat, which is never far from reach. Had he played those two extra games, have he not pinged for the two, two games for the spear tackle?
Yes.
Schultz, of course, got nothing for his. But, no. You know, the outcome may have been different. I don't know. It's all a bit sliding doors.
Yes.
But, you know, the club has taken the decision to go into surgery early, I believe.
Absolutely.
And let him get, you know, tickety-boo for season 2016.
Absolutely. We need him up and running by the pre-season. And, you know, history shows that you have to have a full pre-season to be able to withstand the rigours of the season proper. So, and Bryce, of course, is a father now too, so he's got a little bit on the plate. So maybe, you know, the 8-week layoff or whatever it is a godsend for Bryce at this particular stage of his football and personal life.
Do we know how painful it is? Does it inhibit movement, let's say, above his shoulders? And I'm talking specifically his ability to tie a hair bun. Is it a torn pectoral muscle? Does the club appoint somebody to tie the hair into a bun, or does his wife do that? Or
are you suggesting, Tony, that this may be a blessing in disguise that someone now may take advantage of a winged Bryce with a giant pair of scissors?
Well, could be. He's unable to fight back, so now might be the time
Can we track down Troy Menzel's barber? Because that's the bloke we need to do the job on number four.
Well, good luck to Bryce. It's a it's a hell of an injury, and I guess you could say a hell of a year. But you know, just look forward to him, you know, recovering some great touch.
Next year. Yes, absolutely. And starting from round one, we want him there when the whips are cracking, for sure.
So certainly a smash mouth game of football, as you say. I think it's an American term. A couple of big injuries out of that. How, just to backtrack to Jammo, it was concussion. He's being tested. He's pulled up okay?
As far as I know, he's okay. It was a funny one because when I saw the replay of the incident, I must admit, Vickery got 2 weeks for that.
Yeah.
But I must admit, I was thinking, you know, should Jammo have had more awareness? You know, it was a funny one. I suppose it was off the play, so, you know, Jammo probably didn't, you know, would have felt every right to be protected there. But at the same time, you know, he seemed to be in a bit of a, I don't know where his mind was, but he didn't see Vickery at all. Vickery obviously had opportunity to pull out of that particular collision, so it's probably fair enough, I guess. But, as far as I know, he's pulled up okay. You know, thankfully, as I said earlier, it wasn't the calf injury that's troubled him for a fair while, or the shoulder. That would have been even worse.
Yeah. Now, Tony, we'll get on to the upcoming Freo-Carlton game over in Perth in a minute, but a couple of talking points. Carlton's great Sid Jackson, who gets a fair amount of plugs and mentions on this podcast, I've got to say.
He does.
Not that there's anything Well, I personally think that's wonderful. But his last night was included into the West Australian Football Hall of Fame. How's it take until 2015 for them to recognise the man's greatness?
You do have to wonder, don't you? I mean, it's been a long, long time since he's played waffle football. I mean, I think he came over at the end of to Carlton at the end of 67, couldn't get a clearance, so he stood out in the premiership year of 68. And with Bert Thornley, he came across as well. And he was actually the club's runner in the 68 grand final, running Barassa's messages. And you'll see him, you know, in the last moments of the play when the siren goes and Barassa's embraced. You'll probably see him there, sit there in the tracksuit. So, you know, that was a big moment in time that he missed out on. But fortunately, he was there for the 70 and 72 triumphs, well deserved. But you're right what you're saying. I mean, he was playing West Australian Football League a long, long time ago, and in fact, I think he was robbed of the Sandover. He got a week's suspension for having protested his innocence ever since. He always said that he was innocent of the charge for which he was penalised. Cost him the Sandover medal.
Yeah.
But was a great player in Western Australia, and I know that you know the powers that be here made many a trip across the Nullarbor to earn Sid's signature. You've got to remember that Carlton at the time, through that early period, mid period of the 1960s, actually had Barry Cable's signature on a Form 4 to play for the Carlton Football Club. Now, a Form 4 was effectively a stat deck, which said that if I'm to play with any team in the Victorian Football League, Carlton will be the team.
Yeah.
Ken Hand signed Cable on a Form 4 initially, and I think after 2 years, the first Form 4 lapsed. He then got him to re-sign, I think, when Western Australia played Victoria in the Carnival. And when he re-signed, I think one of the Carnivals was here in Melbourne, and Barry Cable actually trained with Carlton here at Princess Park on a night free. He wasn't ready. He still didn't feel that he was ready to make the move, and the second Form 4 lapsed. And after Cable achieved all he could possibly achieve in the waffle, North came knocking. The timing was right, and he joined North. But it's interesting to think what might have been.
Quibble here, but didn't feel that he kind of had a. Well, I guess he didn't morally owe Carlton anything. But
no.
Why was North's pitch better than ours?
Had
the caravan moved on, so to speak.
Maybe Cable himself thought North perhaps might have provided greater opportunity for him than Carlton. That probably by then, late 60s, you know, whenever he came across, early 70s. Had a plethora of great players.
Yeah,
you know, Gallagher was number one rover here, and Jackson was playing, and Carlton were up and about. North were down, so maybe he thought the challenge, you know, was perhaps best served in joining North Melbourne. But you do wonder about the one that got away.
Yeah, but you know, good on him. He made a name for himself at North Melbourne, and he's definitely one of their greats. There's no doubt about that.
He did indeed.
We're kind of in the second half of the season, obviously. Mathematically, there's a chance we won't make the finals.
I haven't done my numbers. You've been crunching them here all.
I have. I've kind of run them through my abacus tone, and the outlook's grim. So we turn to drafting. And, Tone, in your considered opinion, who do we need to look for? More to the point, what do we need to look for?
Yes. Well, I think by and large, you know, we would have a number of spaces to fill, you know, and I'm sure by season's end we're going to see, that, you know, again, players turned over. Mm. The list is, you know, there's fluidity there. We've got to keep, you know, finding more good players. So
to interrupt, Tone, does it depend on the coach as well, who's ultimately chosen?
Well, it may well do because the coach would have an imprimatur on, you know, on the way forward for the team and the sort of players that Carlton need to, you know, to move forward, as they say. But I just personally would think that a key defender is probably what Carlton mostly needs. And depending on where we finish, we may well have access to, you know, three key position players, one of three, each of whom have been touted as the players of the 2015 draft. And speak of Jacob Wietering, who they compare to Geelong's Harry Taylor, the way he plays.
Wow, okay.
Josh Shack, who's the, you know, the power forward with a thumping left foot kick, and another key position player, Francis, who I don't know a lot about. But curiously, there was a game played recently, a TAC Cup game, where Wietering stood Shaq and actually took the honours. And I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that Wietering is giving away a little bit of size and height to Shaq, but clearly outpointed him. So I think what I'm saying there is if Carlton happens to finish within range, that, you know, more than likely they'll target one of those three young men as a future key position defender here at Carlton. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. Of course, you've got the added dimension with the father-sons. You know, will Carlton go, you know, Jack Silvani? Will it look at Bailey Rice? And will the team or the club try and trade a name for another early first-round pick? All these machinations come into play. And, you know, you think about, oh, to be a recruiter. You know, that's there's so much to it. And so many dimensions in getting the selection absolutely spot on, you know. And, you know, when they say that, you know, the recruiter's job, you know, carries as much pressure as the senior coaches, if not more, you have to believe it, because clubs now, they live and die on their draft selections, don't they? And, you know, and sometimes we don't know the outcomes for 2, 3 years, 4 years, you know, because these players take time to develop. I remember asking the great John Nicholls, perhaps the end of the draft of 2 years ago, what are your thoughts, John, on who we've picked up? And he said to me, ask me in 50 games in 2 years from now.
Yeah.
So that's when you get a better reading on how good these players actually are. But, you know, they're the challenges ahead for the recruiting team, and Stephen Silvani is list manager, and it won't be long before they're stepping up to the plate to call those names, but rest assured they've all been working overtime, you know, looking at tapes and going to games and, you know, exhausting all avenues to make sure that when they make that call on draft day that they get it right.
Hell of a decision to make about his own son too.
Well, he's on record as saying he stands aside for that decision. That will have to come from the greater majority.
That's a bit like Colo here when he stood outside the discussions when Carlton moved to Etihad Stadium. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it is. Yes, it is. It's that was
anyway.
A bit unfortunate.
Sorry to bring that up, Tone. we land a key position backman, does that give Carlton a spine?
Well, I think it helps. I mean, you know, if you look at it, I mean, you know, we were talking at the weekend about the loss of Jammo, you know, and how it impacted on the team. Well, Sam Rowe wasn't there either, was he?
So we were bereft. Yeah, and you know, no big bodies down back.
That's very true.
Well, I'd say apart from Whitey.
Well, that's a fair point. So I think we're building on the spine, you know, and it will help. It certainly won't be a hindrance. It'll be a great help to have another big body, you know, in the back half.
I'm interrupting you again, Tone, but did that forward structure seem to break down a bit on Friday night? There just didn't seem to be that, you know, that tall marking forward that option.
Hendo wasn't really able to clunk them, was he? You know, and Levi, you know, kicked that magnificent goal inside the square.
That was magnificent.
But I think it was more. I'll acknowledge Richmond's pressure. I think there. I just felt that we were under the pump up the ground, and we didn't seem to be able to find a clear way through to the forward line. So I don't know that the Carlton forwards actually were afforded tremendous opportunity. Maybe I'm being a bit kind to the forwards, I don't know. But I just felt that we seemed to be really stymied the way we're trying to get the ball forward. And I just don't think we got a clear go at it. So we were sort of rendered impotent up the ground, you know, and I think it had that spillover effect down to our attack. But in saying that, you know, I see Robert Walls was quite critical of Lockie Henderson for the way he played, and I think Menzel was another one thrown in, and Chris Yaron. So, look, we just want to see effort this week in Frio. We've got the top team on their own dunghill, so it's not going to be an easy assignment, but let's see how the boys commit themselves, because that's all you want, commitment.
Well, previewing this particular game, we don't know the list at the moment. It hasn't been decided, but how do we complete this mission with honour?
Well, I think all we can ask is for our players to commit to the contest, put their heads over the ball, and give it their best shot. You know, obviously, you know, we're playing a team that's edging towards the final series, and is going to have a big hand in how it pans out in September. So really, we must play for pride, and this is probably the greatest challenge we face for a long time, Fremantle away. So, as I said, you know, the gauntlet was thrown down to a couple of players through the course of the week. Let's see how they respond. But I just want to see, really, the way I want to see the players again go about it the way they have for the part in the past month, because that's been very heartening, you know, and it shows me that the players are responding to John Barker, and John Barker's allowing them a little bit of license to, you know, show some flair and finesse. Admittedly, the polish hasn't been there, but at least the players have been given the confidence to take the game on, and that's what we want to see, a red hot contest from our players. No matter whether it's Fremantle, Melbourne, or whoever we get to play from here on in.
It's Frio versus Carlton Saturday night at Subiaco, 5:40 p.m. That's Western time.
Yes.
Which makes it, what, about 7:40
here.
Our time. So I'm not sure if the game's on live on TV.
I'd imagine it would be. And one little thing, I hope I'm not talking out of school here, but I'd imagine that one player that they may be looking at for selection is Kieran Byrne. Now, Kieran Byrne had a game back last week and went pretty well. Would probably benefit from the wide open spaces over at Subiaco.
Yeah.
Again, what I've enjoyed with John's coaching as much as anything is selection, because he's giving these players an opportunity to play, and we supporters want to see our future out there strutting their stuff. So let's see what happens there with the possible selection of the Irishman Casey Byrne.
Now, he had a hamstring tear, didn't he? A groin.
Yes,
that's taken
a little bit of time.
Best part of the season.
It has, you know, and he was looking so good too at the time that he broke down.
His
parents
were out here. You met his parents, and he's very attractive.
Yeah, he's a great fellow.
He's a fox. A
lovely family. can't speak highly enough of them. And it was a shame, you know, for him and for them that he, you know, unfortunately he's had to battle injury throughout. But let's hope that he gets a gig at Subiaco, because for players like him, there is a lot to achieve, you know, in the remaining games of the season. And, you know, he's one of those players that has a real chance to, you know, make an impression. We've already probably seen it with Nick Graham, you know, admittedly out now, but, you know, took the opportunity and delivered to the hilt. And that's what we want to see. We want to see these young blokes out there having a go and staking their claim for future Carlton teams. So all power to him.
Just before we wrap up, Tom, we're just going to quickly go over the players who have played at both clubs.
Yes.
A couple of... I mean, there's only four, but I was surprised by one or two here. I didn't know Stephen O'Reilly had actually played for Frio. I know he'd played here at Carlton, hadn't made, let's say, the hugest impact while here.
No. And unfortunately, he was one of the names that was sort of... he was implicated in the salary cap debacle, you know, and I think he might have been... an informant some point, which was disappointing. Chris Bond. Chris Bond was a good, honest little player for the Carlton club. Played his best footy at Richmond, obviously, and then ended up at Frio, and is still there, I think, in a coaching capacity at the club, or is he might have gone elsewhere. I may have that wrong. Maybe he's in South Australia these days, but he was for a long time... involved with the machinations of the Fremantle Football Club. Yeah. Troy Longmuir was a... Do you remember Troy? He was a half-forward flanker here.
Dimly.
Played a handful of games here. And Robert Warnock, who, of course, is not nursing the... he's been winged and is nursing that shoulder at the moment. He's probably gone through what Bryce Gibbs is about to go through. So it seems to be, the shoulder is one of those fashionable injuries in this day and age. So I saw him with a clipboard at the Northern Blues game last week in the rooms afterwards. So they've got him working behind the scenes there in the engine room at the Northern Blues.
Well,
so
you've got to earn your pay. There's no free rides in this club, you'd like to think.
Very true. Very true.
Well, catch the game as best you can, radio or internet or TV. Apologies for not having details at hand, but look, I'm sure you'll be able to find out. Check your local guides for details, basically.
Yes, look forward to that.
And we will catch you next week on the Two Tones. Thank you again, Tony DeBolfo.
Always a pleasure, Tony.
And myself, Tony Moclair. Luca over with the club this week, so Julian has filled in. Thank you, Julian.
Most capable replacement.
And we will catch you next week on the Two Tones.